Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm that control operator for this Limark technical net. It's been going strong for over 44 years, and every Sunday night we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and learn from each other and teach each other and are entertained by each other, and I hope you enjoy it tonight. Thanks for coming again this particular 8 p.m. on a Sunday night. I hope everyone had a great field day. So let me drop for a second, and I will come back and give you the usual links. Okay, if you want to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzles. Offer me some puzzles that I could use here. They're very rare. If you have a technical expertise in some technical thing in the news and you want to share it with us, you could send me email and we'll arrange for something. If you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at some NASA space-related story, you can get him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. As always, I put together a link page of interesting articles and YouTubes that I've seen throughout the week, and I leave it open for pretty much forever. So if you want to have access to that any old time, day, night, what have you, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. And that'll bring you to my link page. And next week there'll be some more, and the following week even more. And we don't take it down. We leave it up there. So if you have a severe case of insomnia and you want to check out some articles that I thought were interesting, give it a go. We have a chat room that's available. Sometimes it's busy. Sometimes it's quiet. Last week it was rather busy. You can get to it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the chat room. We have a audio stream on the internet of the technical net, and I leave it live the rest of the week so you can listen into Glen Oaks. If you don't have a radio nearby, you can access that by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And I always like to remind people that my KC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many guys that unfortunately either moved away, I wish them well, and others that unfortunately have become silent keys over the years. Their wisdom is frozen in amber in the form of an MP3 file. So take a look and check it out, and I'm sure you'll find some very interesting recordings all the way back in 2006. Anyway, that's the usual links. Let me drop for a second. I'll come back and tell you what we have planned for tonight. Okay, no guest speakers tonight, no April Fool's tricks tonight, so I'm sure some of you might be happy about that. We're going to have a generic vanilla edition. I will ask for people to offer up their questions or comments or topics, and we'll get a little list going. I'll ask them to give me their first name, their call sign, and if it's amateur radio related or science and technology related. We accept both. I would like the first few questions to be amateur radio related, since we are a amateur radio repeater and an amateur radio club. Nevertheless, that should take us hopefully to about 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that should last till about approximately 11 p.m., and I will return at that time to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So if the laws of physics continue to work and my shack doesn't break any more than it's broken already today, and the repeater doesn't break, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. The average is about two or three, usually towards the end of the net. We'll see what we can do tonight. So we're open for business. Anyone who has any questions or comments or topics, and they want to put their name on the list. Again, it's always nice to put your name on the list early rather than very, very late and then be disappointed because there's no more time left. So, but usually those people come late, so they won't hear any of this. Anyway, anyone want to put their name on the list for tonight, please hit that push to talk.
And 2XJN.
AD2DU. Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Wes, Alex, and Sam recognized. Anyone else want to add their name to the list tonight?
Kilo Echo 2, Charlie Alpha Bravo.
What's your first name, sir?
My first name is Andreas. I'm in Kingdom Falls, New Jersey.
Okay, very good. Andreas, nice to meet you. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? Let me know.
Kilo Echo 2, Delta Zulu Victor, Kevin.
Okay, Kevin recognized. Wes, I bet you can guess what question I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, I think all of the guys they have that have ham radio related subjects before of me introduction.
Okay, very good. Thank you once again, Wesley. You are a gentleman and a scholar. Alex, what can I do you for today?
This may be a silly question, but I keep encountering a lot of static electricity as I'm walking around the house, either like doing trash bags or whatever. I tend to listen to the radio, and it shocks the cord on the radio, and I can hear it in the earphones. So I don't want to hurt the radios. What can I do to decrease me having static electricity? I'm assuming it's bad if I want to, like, modify a radio and I touch a circuit board all charged up. AD2DU.
Okay. It depends upon the degree of protection. Towards the end of your question, you mentioned a specific case. And there's a lot of equipment out there that's relatively inexpensive. There's little wrist straps that ground to the mat that you're working on, and that can be wired to a local ground, a radiator, or some piece of metal nearby you. That's for static protection for electrical circuits, where you have a much bigger chance of blowing out some of these very delicate, discrete components. For general, I don't think you'll have that much risk that you're not really developing. You shouldn't really be developing that much static potential voltage to knock out a fully enclosed, completed device. When you get into the guts of it, yeah, you can blow out all kinds of interesting, expensive pieces of equipment. So I can't really give you great advice on a mobile way. The only really good methods of static protection are kind of in place. You're not really moving around. You get yourself go to Amazon, get yourself some straps, and make sure that your mat that you're working on can be grounded as well, and use that method. As far as what's going on in your house, it's probably has something to do with the fact that your humidity is probably relatively low, because static charges dissipate with high humidity, and you also probably have carpeting or fabric of some kind. You have material that you rub against when you walk, so it's either something to do with the slippers you wear in the house or the floor that you have. So you might want to consider a carpet or something to dull that tendency.
Yeah, I guess I do wear Crocs in the house, which is basically just rubber. The wristbands make a lot more sense now that I know they're actually wired to something. I was going to ask you how the wristbands work, but you answered it, that it actually is electrically grounded. No, that's helpful. Thank you for the information, 82 to you.
You're welcome, Alex, anytime. Well, any Sunday. Thank you for participating. I appreciate it. Sam, what do you got for me tonight?
Did Roy comment about the wristband?
Oh, sure, Paul.
Yeah, I don't know if you told them. Used to be a 1 meg resistor was what they used to use, or still use. So back to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would assume that they have those things built into most of them. They look like they're very inexpensive. I've never kind of been aghast at the price of these things on Amazon, but then probably because they're all made in China. So, yeah, by their very nature, they're inexpensive.
Yeah, people made them up for their shop. I know I did that decades ago, but that was the way to go. Just grab a 1 meg resistor and make up your own strap, and that was it. I guess buying things is definitely easier. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah. I mean, again, if it was either very difficult to get, or if they had a ridiculous price, but they're basically a little conductive coat on a layer of rubber or silicone or something like that. And, I don't know if it pays to kind of build your own as far as those devices go. But, you're free to. I'm sure people have played around with tinfoil and all kinds of interesting ways of making their own grounding straps.
I never even thought about buying one, but that's very good. And my guess is if you were to research what you're buying, you'll probably find the 1 meg ohm resistor in there somewhere. Back to you.
Yeah, makes sense. You just want it to bleed the current away. You don't want to. You don't want to feel the hit yourself. And, going through a resistance, you're not going to really get enough current for your muscles to notice it at all. Yeah. Okay. Sam, what do you got tonight?
Well, I was wondering about your take on field day and the bands. Did you notice if the bands were working or dead, or if the activity was similar to past years? I'd like to know your take on field day. I imagine that you were listening or participating with it, so I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Okay, well, it was very busy. Especially it was nice to see the data side of the band really active. So I'm assuming a lot of CW was going on and probably some other data modes on that side of the band. Let's see. 40 was going crazy most of the time. 20 was kind of, it wasn't quite as busy I perceived as 40, but it was busy. Unfortunately, when you started to go up to 17 and 15 and 12 and 10 and 6, it died rather quickly. 10 meters was almost empty. The only time I heard something was local guys from the club trying to check in with the 10-meter net. Unfortunately, my radio, once again, I upgraded firmware when I knew I shouldn't. So I got to deal with the company and see if I can get it back to doing what it's supposed to. So I couldn't transmit today, unfortunately. But like I said, 10 meters was dead as per usual. There were a couple of people locally, but there was no propagation to speak of. It got much better at 20 meters and 40. 80 was active. You had to kind of wait towards the later part of the day into the evening to really see it pick up. But I think it was a successful event. A lot of people were on it, and there was a lot of transmission going on.
Roy, did you notice a difference between last night and this morning in terms of activity?
It might have been a little bit less active today than yesterday. You know, I guess some of the guys, you know, they set up and they work hard and then they play and then little by little they kind of fade away. But it was still very active today. You know, maybe it was down by about 10 or 15%, but, you know, that's not a really significant drop in my humble opinion.
Thank you for your input. I was very interested to get your impressions.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity. We usually don't talk about events on the technical net for some strange reason. You know, Dick, may rest in peace, used to ask people how things went, and I tried, and usually people kind of mum on the subject for some strange reason, so it's a good opportunity. Like I said, it looked like a very successful one. I was a little concerned earlier in the week because the weather report was kept on talking about lightning storms. And, you know, although you can work around the lightning storms, I don't want anyone to risk anything. But it turned out to be a pleasant day after all. I think it missed it a little bit at one point or another, but nothing serious. Is that it, Sam?
Yeah, that's it for now, but I'm listening and will participate a little bit later. Thank you very much, Roy. Alpha Echo 2, standing by.
Okay, very good. Andreas, what can I do for you today?
Hello to all. This is Kilo Echo 2, Charlie, Alpha Bravo. Andreas from Kingdom Falls. I'm new to this, very new, and I got some questions. So I'll be asking some stupid questions. I'm trying to learn things. I just set up my system. I have a Yaesu FT3185. I got an antenna in the yard, and yesterday I bought an SWR meter. The first question I have is, how is the quality of the sound? Over to you.
You're pretty much full quieting. There's no background noise. There's the ambience of your room, but otherwise it's a perfect signal.
Oh, thanks a lot. That makes me feel a little better. Question. The SWR meter that I bought yesterday, and I'm trying to use it, gives me different readings when I try to communicate with different repeaters. It shows 1.1 on some of them, 1.2 on others, and it shows a 2 on other. I wonder, and I don't know much. Like I said, I'm here to learn. Why is there these random readings for different repeaters using the same equipment? Over to you.
Okay, well, the simplest answer is the different repeaters operate on different frequencies, and your antenna is a tuned resonant circuit. So it's tuned to a particular frequency, hopefully, theoretically, at its frequency, resonant frequency, you should have a standing wave ratio of 1:1. As you drift off of it, and different antenna designs have different bandwidths, different rates at which the impedance it goes off 1:1 quicker or slower. So for your given antenna at your particular residence, the ones that produce something close to a 1.0 standing wave ratio is closer to the resident point of your antenna than the repeaters that you use and you see a 2.0 SWR.
Okay, good. Good to know. Thanks. That makes me feel a little bit better. I thought there was something wrong with my antenna or the cable from the antenna to my unit. The other question I have is about lightning arresto and grounding for this antenna. I have it on a pole, a metal pole, about 25 feet off the ground. The antenna is about 6 feet tall. So let's say it's about 30, the top of the antenna is about 35 feet off the ground. Should I be concerned about installing a lightning arresto?
Okay. Grounding has been a topic repeatedly discussed here and all over the frequencies. And a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. One of the major problems is the term ground is a terrible term. There's a lot of different things that are all called ground that confuse the heck out of everyone. It sort of depends on a bunch of things. Do you live in an area that has relatively high risk of lightning strikes? There are places in the metropolitan area that regularly get lightning, and there are other parts of the area that seldom get lightning. It also depends on your belt and suspenders people, a person. There's some people out there who the term that everyone uses is float the ground, which is basically their way of saying they don't hook it up to any ground and they just kind of hope that it works out. If you really want to be a belt and suspenders guy, there are lightning arresters. You can place it on your transmission line and you put a lead from it down to earth ground near your antenna. And if there's a lightning strike that unluckily hits your antenna or its stand, hopefully it'll jump to the lightning arrestor and go to a straighter path to ground. They're not that terribly expensive, and it's not that difficult to put it in. It's just a little in between in your transmission line. So, you know, you have the connectors instead of a straight line from your antenna feed point to your radio. You split it and you put the lightning arrestor there. Yeah, and there are other things that we like to talk, and some people like it, some people don't, about grounding your entire system. It usually helps in limiting static discharges on your radio and can decrease some of the background noise a bit. Unfortunately, you know, lightning bolts have a mind of their own. You can suggest a path, but you can't force it in any particular path. And sometimes lightning bolts will strike things far away from your antenna, but because of the nature of these large surges of current, they induce magnetic fields, which induce other currents in your outlet line, and people have had strikes nowhere near their electrical outlets that blew out electrical equipment. So you can be safe, but, you know, there's only so much you can do. Any other aspects of this question?
I thank you very much. I really appreciate all this information. It's been difficult to get somebody to take the time and explain to me. Like I said, I'm new to this, and I'm just thirsty for answers to all of these challenges I face. I thank you very much. I didn't get your call sign. If you don't mind giving that to me again.
Yes, Andreas. It is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, AC2GS. That is no silly question. We were all beginners once. You know, none of us popped out of our mothers with a thorough knowledge of Part 97 of the FCC regulations.
Oh, thank you very much. And what's your first name, if I may ask?
Yes, it is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee.
Thanks, I appreciate it. One more question, if I may. I power this unit. It's an 85-watt base unit. It gets to FT3185 with 12-volt power that come, you know, plugged into the regular AC of the house. And the house does not have good grounding. It's an old house. I wonder if that affects the sound, and because I want to test that by powering my unit from a 12-volt or 14-volt lithium battery and see if there is a difference, if the signal is any clearer when it's powered by a 12-volt battery instead of the house power. Over to you.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. A lot of us do that. You know, there's always this question, even when it comes to the power supplies. There are two types of power supplies. There are somewhat older design linear power supplies and somewhat more modern designs called switching power supplies. The linear power supplies tend to be bigger, heavier, more expensive, less efficient. Obviously, that means that the switching power supplies tend to be smaller, lighter, cheaper, and more efficient. There's always the question that if you don't do proper filtering with switching power supplies, the increased switching frequency that the switching power supplies use can kind of bleed into radio equipment and give you some additional noise as well. So there are people who buy, and I use switching power supplies, who've done that. We plug it into, I have a lithium iron phosphate rechargeable battery. I plug it in and I listen to the background sounds, and they seem to be the same. So as far as my switching power supply is concerned, it's not really creating a lot of noise in my system. But it's a perfectly good idea for you to try out. This is a little experiment. One aspect of our lovely little hobby is that we're kind of scientists. We tinker and we experiment and we learn things. So it sounds like a very good practical experiment.
Oh, thanks a lot, Roy. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking at the at this unit I have here. It says DC switching power supply, so I can connect to what you were saying. I don't want to take any more time on the air. I'm sure there is others who want to ask things, but I would like to some other time maybe take a couple of minutes and switch to the battery, and you tell me if it sounded any different. Over to you, Roy.
Sure, we can do that. Well, you know where to find me. I'm here every Sunday night starting at 8 o'clock. And I wish you good luck, and I'm sure that you're going to get a great deal of enjoyment out of this hobby. It has been very enjoyable for me all these years, and I've learned a lot of things, and I like the opportunity to share it with people. So I thank you for participating tonight.
Thank you, too. I'll be standing by. I got a couple more questions for later, but I'll be standing by for now. Thanks a lot, Roy.
Okay, very good. Kevin, are you there?
Good evening, Roy. Yes, I am here.
What can I do for you tonight?
So I have a situation, and I'm trying to see if maybe your expertise can help me out a little bit here. So for context, I'm trying to get into the 10-meter band, trying to dabble in some HF. I have a Yaesu FT897 that is connected to a NFET half-wave. The situation is, though, I'm located in an apartment, and I'm pretty tight on space. I don't have access to where I can, like a yard or anything where I can set the antenna up. However, I would like to try and see if I can maybe have the antenna maybe indoors or somewhere or another that I can play around with the 10-meter band without needing to go outside. I think the walls that I have are, I'll say, about 9 feet the longest. So needless to say, even if I were to have the half wave up at a, like, parallel to the ground, it'd be too long, and it kind of bends around. And I've tried using that method before, and I've gotten somewhat adequate success. I've gotten a couple contacts. However, I always felt that the sensitivity hasn't been the best, and I've had difficulty, it seems like, with other contacts hearing me on the other side. So I just wanted to ask if there's any tips and tricks you might have for maybe putting an antenna indoors, or if you were in this type of situation, what would you do? Over to you, KE2DZZ.
Okay, very good. Now, number one, I don't think if I had to choose an antenna for 10 meters, I would choose an NFED. NFEDs have some nice features that are lost if they're designed for 10 meters. The beauty usually of NFED half-wave is that it operates on harmonic level. So if you cut something long enough for, say, 40 meters, and if you build it right, you'll find that it can resonate and work 20 meters and 10 meters and such, which is a nice feature. If you cut the NFED for 10 meters, you pretty much only got 10 meters. Just on that point, it isn't that terrible, except that the price that we all pay for NFEDs are, you know, either a 49-to-1 or a 64-to-1 to bring the impedance down. But they tend to be somewhat inefficient balanced. So all things being equal, you know, if you could run a quarter wave somewhat ground plane or even with a counterpoise out your window, you probably would get a lot more signal. You can use antennas inside a house. It's not recommended. It puts you at exposure to RF radiation, which isn't as dangerous as some people afraid of microwaves and such believe. But still, you know, it's not nice to, you know, you might get an electrical burn if you get very close to a transmitting indoors antenna. So although you can do the indoors, and it's also important what kind of insulation is in your walls. If it's just brick and mortar and such, that's not terrible. If there's a lot of metal reinforcing it, that's not good, because now it's more like living in a Faraday cage than just living in a box. So have you ever considered something like a whip antenna that goes out your window and with a tuning loading coil? I know MFJ used to make those, and unfortunately they're semi out of business these days, but they might still be available. But there are other antennas that aren't great, but they probably would give you more bang for the buck if you were looking for something that wouldn't kind of be noticed too much and could be operated out of a window, say.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. I think those are some fair points. I have looked at some whip antennas. I considered at one point the Yaesu ATAS 120 antenna, the one that's tunable to different frequencies, and that way I can adjust whichever band I'd like to kind of future-proof myself in that kind of standpoint. I always thought that ideally you would want a horizontal or diagonal facing antenna on SSB versus vertical, for getting more contact or getting the power out there. That might be my own ignorance there, or my lack of understanding. Would you say that if, let's say, you put an antenna, linear or horizontally oriented antenna, like an NFED versus a vertical width, do you believe that the effects will be very similar? Would it be just as effective?
I don't think polarization angle has that much of an impact. So we discussed, I think, last week or the week before, that vertical polarized antennas have a reputation of being a little bit noisier. Reason being, among other things, that they're a little bit more omnidirectional. They don't favor any particular direction, so they can pick up noise 360 degrees. And also, there's some belief that electromagnetic noise tends to favor being vertically oriented itself, and so that might be why. But push comes to shove, vertical antennas can be very useful, and as I mentioned, they're omnidirectional. You don't have to worry about any directionality where, you know, your dipole might be pointed a little bit off, although the amount of gain in dipoles that are horizontal are not great. You know, we're talking about 2.1 decibels, so it's next to nothing. And in the environment of near-Earth ground, these gains kind of get soft and squishy. But also rotation. Also, just because your antenna is vertically polarized, if you are going to talk to someone relatively far away and go through the ionosphere, there's something called Faraday rotation, in which your polarization angle rotates in space. Once upon a time, I had two antennas. One was vertical and one was horizontal, and I could plug them both into my radio and listen to each in one ear. And there was a guy in Florida who sounded to other people like he was fading in and fading out. But what was happening was his signal was actually rotating through space. And it was turning vertical, then horizontal, then vertical, then horizontal, then vertical and horizontal. And so my two antennas picked them up at different times to different degrees because of that. So just because you're polarized horizontally doesn't necessarily mean when it gets to the guy you're talking to that it will still be horizontal. It could very well be vertical or diagonal or what have you. Polarization angles will change in the ionosphere.
Copy that. That's some good insight there. Thank you very much, Roy. I'll definitely take that information. I'll start looking into a vertical whip antennas, and hopefully that can help me get my call sign out there a little better for next time. So I really appreciate the insight there again. I'll stand by on the side now. No more questions for me. So thank you again, Roy. AC2GC, KE2DVB, standing by.
Well, you're welcome, Kevin. Anytime, you know where to find us. And if push comes to shove and you get ready to test out and try out 10 meters, Sunday morning I do a net. For some odd reason, ground wave propagation probably stops right at the Queens-Nassau border, but you might want to try it out. We're at 28.380, sometimes 28.381. Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock. So, give a listen, and if you hear us, holler.
Thank you for that, Roy. I'll see if I could chime in at one point. I'll be trying that out. Thank you again. 73.
Okay, very good. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone out there has any other questions or topics or comments and wants to go on the magic list, let me know right now. Hit that push to talk and give me your call sign, your first name, and if it's science or if it's ham radio.
WB2B.
Okay, Frank recognized, and there was another person who was talking at the same time as Frank, So the other person who wasn't Frank who was talking, could you repeat yourself, please?
Roger Roy, King Bravo 2 Alpha Golf Papa John down here in Cape Cod, Florida. Question about DMR and the Aries walkie-talkie. Back in that.
Okay, very good, John. Wes, do you mind if I answer Frank and John's inquiries before you?
Absolutely, go ahead, please.
Okay, Frank, what would you like to talk about?
Yeah, very good, Roy. WB2BXL here. I was wondering if you went out to KCRC or to another field day and how you did. My impression is the conditions really suck, to use the technical propagation term, but, lots of activity does have a tendency to create some propagation, so to speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, 20 and below was fine. 10 sucked. 10 has sucked for a month and a half, and my guess, if I was a betting man, is that it's not going to get any better until the fall. It was active, and a little less active today than yesterday, but I think it was reasonably decent activity going on. It's just, you can't depend on 10 meters these days, no matter whether the sunspot activity is boiling or quiet.
Yeah. Excuse me. I think some of the experts are hoping for a second peak in the fall. And I mean, that's happened a couple of times before. The best one I ever experienced was in 1972 when I first became a ham. There's a second peak to the 1968 peak. The last sunspot cycle had a second peak in 2015, which was not as pronounced, but that one I had just gotten back on for. So hopefully we'll have a second peak, but yeah, I've noticed that for 10 meters I have not seen anything much on 10 meters. Anyway, all right. That's interesting. Hopefully you guys had a good time. At least the weather was fairly moderate, relatively speaking, this year. You guys are still at White Bennett, I think.
Yeah, apparently this might be our last time for Floyd Bennett. The powers that be that gave us the permit.
You dropped out. But yeah, given all the tumult in the National Park Service, that probably doesn't surprise me too much. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what the situation there is, but I don't think anyone in any government knows what the situation is these days. So we'll just have to play it by ear. Assume that we're not going to be getting Floyd Bennett Field permits for next year and act accordingly. And if we're happily surprised, then so be it.
Yeah, my local club kind of gave up on field day. The guys just really aren't up to it anymore. And I didn't really feel like asking my wife to drive me to another club or going around on the repeaters and pestering somebody else to drive me. So I sat it out again, but I think next year I'll try to look to do some kind of field day. It's something I really enjoyed doing over the years, though there have been quite a few years I've missed. Go ahead.
Yeah, lately we've been recruiting a lot of younger guys, 20, 30, 40, and they really do inject a little bit more energy into the club, so I'm very pleased to see that. I love all of our members, from our oldest member to our youngest member, but, you know, it's... Sometimes you find more enthusiasm in younger people who haven't been as disillusioned as we older people have been.
Yeah, my favorite club all the years was still the first club I was a member of, the older Radio Society of Greater Brooklyn. I think if you Google it, you'll still find a site about them. I think Mitch W1SK still maintains a website with some of the old Super 8 movies from our field days and some audio tapes and stuff. But that was, we had a ball at some of those field days. I'm really sounding like the old guy I am now, but I really had some fun at field day, and the other field day I really enjoyed, I went to out to New Jersey, Barra, Bergen Amateur Radio Association, a couple of years. Jim Joyce and Jerry Jankowicz, NO2T, and I forget Jim's call, and that one. I had a ball with them also. They put up some monster antennas, and we did some really interesting things. Anyway, so field day, some of those field days were a real hoot. Go ahead.
Yeah, different clubs kind of had different population groups over the years. I believe up until a few years ago, our own Andy WA2CDL set up a slow scan TV setup. There was another gentleman, I think he's still around, he's in his mid to late 90s, built most of his own equipment, and they would swap slow scan TV signals back and forth for the audience. You know, a lot of that in the old days. In the old days, K2RIW used to kind of make a tour of a bunch of field days. He would come to ours as well over at Kings County Radio Club because Mel, K2KEY, you know, was the second banana of this technical bet back in those days. So he came by and you know, we sat around the fire and told stories. You probably were there for them. I missed all of that, unfortunately.
Absolutely, I was there for their bowl sessions late at night on field day. That was, you know, that was fun. Yeah, a lot of interesting stories there. You know, Mel, of course, had some really interesting stories. He had, probably still has, I think, Howie may have it now, into GOT. And then Mel had a telegraph key that he believed his grandfather used at Appomattox Courthouse to telegraph Lee's surrender to Lincoln. You know, that is one of the most interesting stories I've probably heard of any ham in all, from any ham in all the years I've been a ham. And knowing Mel, there is probably quite possibly some truth to the story. Go ahead.
Ah, that's a great story. I never heard that. I unfortunately, you know, the people kind of remained at Kings County Radio Club. There were more than a few who had been there for years and years. They were never kind of the storyteller type, so you couldn't really get much out of them. And unfortunately, when I joined that club, that was the same month that Mel kind of took to his bed and then passed away. So I was never able to meet him. I mean, the only... The only experience I've had with Mel is when I kind of listened to the amateurradio.tv archives of the technical net. I found a particular recording where he advised people how they could figure out what a complex impedance was by using Pythagorean theory, which I had already learned from there was another tape from a Blind Ham Association in Minnesota that was teaching that. And they used the exact same method of Pythagorean theorem. And, you know, Mel even cited an old book on mathematical equations for electronics. And I went over to Amazon and found a used copy and bought one.
Yeah, some of the sort of books my my dad taught me electrical equations from when I was a kid. He had a book, I guess, got from like radio school in the Army that he taught me from. And I was like, this is from World War II. You know, why are you giving me this? He's like, the equations haven't changed. You know? You know, that stuff doesn't change.
Yep, I agree with them. Yeah, most of electrical engineering is classical 18th, early 19th century stuff. You know, there's no quantum mechanics. There's no relativity involved in most of it. So, you know, sometimes electrical engineers aren't even taught things like relativity or quantum mechanics. Cause it doesn't really, the only thing is, if you're putting together a GPS system where you have to have a very accurate time standard, you have to understand that the flow of time differs where you are in relation to a gravity well. But, I mean, other than that, that very special case, most of the electronical engineering is very 19th century stuff.
Yeah, I do find that fascinating. That is one of the you know practical applications for relativistic physics is the case of accounting for the time difference between the gravity well and the orbiting GPS satellite. You know, that is certainly fascinating anyway, but I'm sorry, I guess nobody really documented Mel's story about the Morse code key. But, you know, that's fascinating. I'd love to see that documented and the provenance of the key documented, but I don't think any of us were interested enough at the time when Mel was around to really do the work to try to document it and write some good articles on that, because I thought that, you know, that would have been fascinating. But anyway, glad you got out a little today. And yeah, I do miss those old field days, though. Like I said, I'm really sounding like an old geezer now.
Well, you know, there'll be other field days, I hope, and maybe not at Floyd Bennett, but you know, the only constant you can rely on is change. So next year will be something a little bit different.
Yeah, like I said, the situation is sort of similar with the club computer. The guys are getting older and really not that up to it anymore, and I can't really claim I'm doing much better, even though I'm not as old as some of them are. My parents used to complain years ago that my friends in the radio club were all their age, and you know what? They're still my parents' age. That hasn't changed much about amateur radio. Still, one of the younger people, and you certainly are too. Go ahead.
Well, like I said before, it is getting a little bit better. The age factor. I mean, when I first joined Kings County Radio Club, the youngest kid was, I think, in his late 40s. And yeah, that's you know, I mean, whenever you see a convention, you know, you see Xenia, it has no relationship to looking at something like Comic-Con. You know, Comic-Con, you see a bunch of 18 to maybe 30-year-olds, a little bit of a 40, a little bit of a 50, a little bit of a 60. You look at media, God bless these people, they're all 150 pounds overweight, and they're using motorized wheelchairs. Whether they need them or not, I don't know. It's kind of sad. But, you know, but those are changing a little bit. We like I said, the Kings County Radio Club, we have a whole slew of relatively younger guys. They love to do park on the air activations, and they use Discord. And you can pretty much tell someone's age if you mention Discord, and their reply is, "What the heck is that?" So we've adopted Discord as one of our many ways of communicating with each other. And, you know, it's nice to have a mix. You know, I mean, you know, you don't want to have everyone being elderly and doing organ recitals, I call them, where conversations deteriorate to discussions of how your prostate's going. You know, it's always nice to liven things up a bit.
Yeah, I know. I was talking to a vendor who I buy online assessment tools for my clients from, and she's about the same age as some of us, and she said, oh, she just came back from her monthly lunch with her high school friends, and they were all talking about their aches and pains and x-rays and MRIs and CT scans and doctor appointments and stuff. So I said, yep, that's what all us older people do. Roy, you're one of the, you're on the other side of those machines, I guess, now that I think about it. But anyway, I remember a couple of years ago, I think I'd worked Charlie 31, Charlie Tango, worked him a number of times. And I wanted his QSL information. I looked him up and pulled up some pictures of the Radio Club of Andorra. And everyone looked about 80 years old, just like our radio clubs here. Hands are no different anywhere else in the world, Dad.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it sounds like it's a cliche, but God bless them all. Some of them have a lot more energy than I do. We have some members who are in their 80s, and, you know, if their antenna isn't working right, they climb up to wherever it is and they fix it. I'm amazed at some of them. Yeah, I mean, in the good old days, Dick, K2RAW, you know, he was afraid of heights, apparently, because he would have nightmares after the case. But if he had to fix his antennas, he'd put on his safety gear, and he'd climb as high as he had to, even when he was in his mid to late 70s.
He was one of those guys who really brought a lot to amateur radio. You know, we don't have too many people like that anymore. You know, I know few of them, you know, he was sort of one of a kind. Anyway, let you move on. I know that Wesley wanted to do some talking. A couple of other guys do. I'll let you go ahead and let Wesley quiz us on quantum physics or the latest conspiracy theory or whatever. 7-3 for now, WB2BXO.
Okay, 73 for now. Frank, always a pleasure. And we have one person left on the list before we get back, loop back to Wesley. So, John, are you still out there?
Yes, I am, Roy. Roy, you guys bring back some old memories. King Bravo 2, I forgot for Pa. I used to be a member of the Kings County Radio Club back in 1988, 1989, and 90. I don't know if you knew Ed W.A. to NBA, Simon Key now. Also, I got my radio license at Berry Electronics, 512 Broadway. Kitty ran the store. She